Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamma. Today is Tuesday, June 13th, 2017. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
I'm good. It's good to be here. Thank you kindly for having me.
It is great to have you here. It's also great that Dave Hamilton is here. How are you, Dave?
I'm swell. Thanks for having me, Jeff. Always fun to be back.
I love it every single time. Also, I'm glad that iMazing is our sponsor today. And but before we get to talking about iMazing, Brian, I think you deserve a little pat on the back because you were one of the first people to talk about Project Titan before we even knew it was Project Titan. And you're one of the people that's been able to say, yes, Apple's working on a car project, even though we haven't had official confirmation from Apple. And now Tim Cook has said, yep, they have a car project.
You're the source of the leak, Tim.
What was it that Steve Jobs always said? Apple's a company that leaks from the top. Nice to see them continuing in that tradition.
Yeah. It's true. But it's interesting, though, right? That he would spill the beans here.
Yeah, and he did it in a Bloomberg interview.
Yeah, so it was very deliberate. It's not like, you know, oops.
No, this isn't an oops. No, this is we need to tell the stock market that things are okay. And we've got lots of stuff in the pipeline. And I mean, it's Bloomberg after all. That's sort of what you do there.
This interview took place. Now we don't know this for sure, but we know this. This interview took place because someone at Apple picked up the phone, called Bloomberg, and said, "We want to do a story."
Right. Of course, that's what happened. Yes.
Sure. And Bloomberg was like, "Let's clear our schedule."
Yeah. Giddy up. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. So what we know right now is that yes, Apple is working on a car project, but at this point, it is software. They're working on the software for a self-driving car, so not a full standalone car project.
Because we knew going back to shortly after Bob Mansfield took over the project,
which would have been what, about a year ago?
Is that right? Yeah, I think it was about a year ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that wasn't news, but it's news that Apple's confirming it. And I want to iterate that when the story about Apple working on a car first broke, there was a physical car being worked on. Apple did hire the kind of people that you only hire to make cars. Right. Bob Mansfield scaled that back. He got rid of some people. He reassigned some people or let people reassign themselves within other parts of Apple. But that does represent a change from the very beginning. But I guess the major takeaway here is that Apple says it's making a system and that they're not saying what they're going to do with it.
True. So it could be that they're looking to partner with other companies for self-driving cars, or it could be that at some point they decide, yeah, we'll go ahead and just make our own car. But right now, the focus is on the software.
He said something else. It didn't make it into your story. I don't know if you didn't think it was important. But he said that there were three vectors that are coming together. There's electric vehicles. There are autonomous vehicles. And there's ride sharing. And he said that these three vectors are all coming together at the same time. And Tim saying that, I mean, if this is classic Cook code, he's telling us, yeah, we're going to be doing something with ride sharing. And, you know, Apple owns a big stake in Didi ride sharing service in China.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's true, right? You take Apple's software, pump it into an existing ride sharing service that Apple owns a stake in, and there you go.
But it needs to be built into the car. If they're making an autonomous system, the car's got to be built around it.
I think that would be the best case scenario. Certainly, existing vehicles can be retrofitted to be driven. There's no law of the universe that says we can't do that. But there is a a law of simplicity that said it would likely be much easier to do if you built the car that way from the ground up. And there's no reason that a car couldn't be built that way from the ground up, frankly, by anyone.
Apple, the question is, would Apple license out its car operating system?
Yeah, I think it would be a partnership. I don't think it would be a license of, yeah, just go, you know, anybody that wants, sign up, you know, here we go. There's a website, just fill out the
form. We're going to be the Microsoft of cars.
Give us your credit card. That's right. I don't think it's going to be that, but it wouldn't surprise me if they partner. I mean, they've tried, right? We've heard the stories about how they really wanted to partner with BMW to make this, and that fell apart. But I mean, just because it fell apart in the past doesn't say that it could never happen with that company or certainly any other company. So yeah, I think this is very possible to be a partnership. It makes sense.
Well, so imagine, I wrote something along these lines months ago, but imagine a car service built on autonomous vehicles that all spoke to each other and were all running the same software.
Well, that's the key. That's where every autonomous vendor needs to work together, because when we have all the cars on the road communicating with each other, that's when things can become really efficient and way safer, right? I mean, already I think autonomous vehicles are safer than humans driving vehicles. And it doesn't mean that they're, you know, uniformly safe. It's just safer. But, you know, I think about this.
Wait a minute. They're not, they are in the circumstances where they can be used.
Right. Right.
There's still a lot of last mile stuff, a lot of inner city stuff that is a huge problem for self-driving cars.
Totally.
I don't want to oversell that.
No. Thank you for correcting that. That's right. Thank you. But if you think about it, the next time you're on the highway, right, and you've got a car maybe two lengths in front of you and then someone merging in, that person has to wait until there is a pretty massive gap between you and the car in front of you to merge in, because they can't know what you and the car in front of you are going to do. It's possible the car in front of you is going to hit its brakes. It's possible you're going to speed up. Predictably, probably not, right? But you have to leave some buffer in case those things happen. If all three of those cars, however, were in direct communication with each other, man, I mean, you could have cars zipping in and out of merge lanes with, you know, 6 inches to spare at 150 miles an hour. It would all just work because they all know. There's no guessing as to, okay, what's that guy? Like, the whole concept of defensive driving changes dramatically when you have all the cars communicating with each other. It's all, it's not defensive anymore. It's coordinated. And way better. Right. So they all, even if we're going to have, and we should perhaps have, in fact, it would be a very good thing if we had, you know, whatever, 10 different autonomous car vendors, but they have to figure out a way to communicate with each other. Otherwise it's, you know, we're still guessing as to what that car is doing and what this car is doing. And we lose a lot of potential benefit from that.
Yeah. It's, if we have, say, five different autonomous car systems that aren't communicating with each other, we're now back to exactly, well, almost exactly where we are today, where everyone has to guess what everyone else is doing on the road.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not quite where we are today, because if you know how Google's car software responds in these, you know, 2000 scenarios, well, you can just program that in and anticipate what it's going to do, even if it's not willing to tell you or able to tell you what it's going to do. It'd be better if it was just going to say, hey, I'm, you know, I want to do this. Can we work it out? But predictability of these systems is likely going to be much greater than the predictability of the current, wet systems.
Oh,
by
yes.
Wet, I mean, you know, us humans.
Yeah, mostly bags of water.
System. You got it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it takes out ego. which is
right.
important.
Like, oh, totally. Yeah. Or any other thing that's going on, you know, someone is in a rush to get somewhere or distracted because, they just found out some news at work or whatever, like it removes all of that, which is great. So there you go.
Okay. But we are a long way from self-driving cars working everywhere. And we are at least
5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we are a long way from all of the competing systems talking to each other. Because I, by the way, I agree with you. We got to go there. Right, if we don't go there, we're doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely wrong. Yes.
I think an intermediary step will be a platform that is doing all the ride sharing and doing all of the autonomous driving as well. And that may be from Google, maybe from Google, maybe from Uber, and it may be Apple, or it may be some other party that hasn't come up yet.
Yep.
But I think that'll be the big intermediary step, and I think that that's one of the things that Tim Cook is telegraphing to us. The question is who's the partner? Who are they going to do it with? Are they going to do it in China first? Are they going to do it somewhere here in the States? Are they going to work with GM, BMW? Are they actually going to maybe even buy Uber? No.
There's no one running Uber right now. So
it's pretty easy
for someone to take over.
Does seem like that. But anyway, yeah. So there's all these different little stair steps that we have to take towards this better future of, you know, resource management and lower deaths and better transportation.
Yeah.
Yes. And now we know that Apple is really playing a part in this, even though we already knew. Having Tim Cook come out and say, yeah, this is what we're working on, that's a big deal.
Now, here's a question for you, gentlemen. Mm-hmm. Does this mean that this project has reached the point of viability, right? Because you know how Apple works.
Oh yeah, we're not saying no anymore, right?
Right. They say no to everything, but once you get to a certain point, it's yes.
Yep.
And my question is, because it doesn't everything that's leaked about this project doesn't feel like we're anywhere near yes. Doesn't feel like we're anywhere near the point of viability.
And yet,
except this. Yeah.
Except this. Yeah. Well, excellent point.
Yeah. So my guess is that Apple's software project is at a point where they feel comfortable talking about it, because otherwise Tim wouldn't have said anything. And
what if Tim is telling the team, you better make this work? Because I'm a telling folk.
No, I think this is, we've known for a little while, and we wanted to dole out our news when we wanted to dole out our news, but we had to show up and say something. So here we are.
Oh, you know, there's another like really simple possibility here is that regulatory filings are about to, will soon be in existence. Uh-oh.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, sure. That actually seems really plausible now that you say it. Apple likes to control the message.
We've already had regulatory filings. We know this is happening. There is no doubt that Apple is working on this. There has been no doubt for the last 18 months that Apple is working on this. We have regulatory filings that Apple says Apple is working on this. But there may be something additional, something bigger.
That's my guess, is if it's related to filings, there's something that's about to be made public that Apple wanted to control. So Tim goes and does his Bloomberg interview, and Apple stays in control of the story.
I like it.
I like it too. Hey, I also like that our sponsor today is iMazing. And one of the things that I love about iMazing is that it's the app, it's available for your Mac or your Windows machine, that gives me the interface to deal with all the content on my iPhone and iPad that I wish Apple had given me. But Apple didn't, so hey, iMazing took care of it for me. I love that their system lets you go in and add and remove whatever content you want. One of the things that I like is that if you are like needing to save specific voicemail messages, or you have a specific conversation thread that you've had going on in messages and you want to save that out. Like maybe you ended up by chance doing a business conversation through text message because that's just how it worked. Okay, save that out. And now you've got that transcript in essence. So everyone involved in the project knows what's going on. I love that they make it easy to get stuff on and off. I also love that they make it easy to back up and restore all of your content. And that's especially nice right now because they are supporting iOS 11. So if you are experimenting with the developer beta, then this makes it even easier to make sure that you can roll back to a stable version of the operating system if you need to. With a public beta coming up soon, if you're willing to rush in where angels fear to tread and you want to test it out, iMazing will be a really handy tool to have around so that if something goes wrong, you can get back to a working device. So here's what you need to do. Go to the iMazing website, which is imazing.com/TDO, I-M-A-Z-I-N-G, imazing.com/TDO. When you go there, you can download the trial version, test it out, make sure it works the way you want. Also, when you go to that link, you get 20% off your copy. And that applies to an individual license, or if you're doing, say, like a family license, it doesn't matter. You get 20% off. So that's a great way to save some money. And I just love that iMazing is an affordable little tool that it's worth whatever the price because of how much it does for you. So go get your copy, imazing.com/TDO. And thank you, iMazing, for being our sponsor. Okay, Dave, I wanted you here today, not just because I value your perspective on whatever topic we're discussing, but also because you have a lot of under the hood knowledge about the different Wi-Fi mesh systems. And Eero just did some made some announcements about their new product. And I was hoping you could help sort out what that means for people like me.
Right. Yeah. So Eero is still currently my favorite Wi-Fi mesh system. They have been around the longest and have hardware that has been, I don't want to say good enough, but probably even better than good enough. It hasn't been the most advanced hardware on the market, but their software matters more. Once the hardware is at a certain level, and there's always has been. So they can do a lot of things that other vendors just haven't put out yet. So that's basically the reason that I really like Eero. The good news is, as you said, Eero isn't just standing still. They are iterating on their own stuff too. And today they announced second gen, two new hardware products. The first is a second gen Eero that looks exactly the same as the first one, but it now has three radios in it instead of two. So it is a tri-band system, and it is tri-band that can be used in any configuration. So it will figure out whether it should be using part of the tri-band for the backhaul between all the Eeros, or if it should expose it all to be front facing. And it just sort of, it has its own algorithms and figures that out. If you have Ethernet in your walls and you choose to plug in via Ethernet, well, now all three of those bands will be exposed to all the clients because that's how that works. So that gives you especially with 5 gigahertz and all of the beam forming and all of that that's there, when the radios can really focus on the clients, you can get much faster speeds because you get much better range. So having multiple 5 gigahertz radios in that thing can make a big difference.
Okay. So I think you just answered the two big questions I have as an Eero user. It's faster potentially, and I have potentially a wider range that my mesh network will cover.
That's right. Yeah, and they say that it's got double the performance of the first generation Eero in terms of speed and in terms of range, which was already pretty good. They also added in Thread connectivity. Thread is used to communicate with a lot of kind of new Internet of Things type devices. So that's built in now to Eero. And it uses USB-C for both power and data. And so I'm led to believe that there's more news coming on that front at some point. So, but that's good. They also released, and so that Eero, again, exact same form factor as the original, looks like a sort of white, rounded edged Apple TV size device. It has two Ethernet ports on the back and has all the things we just talked about. They also released the Eero Beacon today, which is a dual radio, but it also supports Thread, device that plugs directly into the wall. So you don't have to worry about a power cable. You don't have to worry about anything. You just plug it in. So very similar to what Ubiquiti did with their Amplify mesh points. Those just plug directly into the wall. The Eero ones, I literally have a box of these new Eeros sitting behind me that I have yet to open because we've been doing this this show here, and it arrived just before we started recording. But the briefing that I got tells me that they will block only one outlet if you put it on the upper outlet, and if you put it on the lower one, then it'll block both. And that's, you know, you may want that or you may not.
So but you have the choice. So that's
you have
smart.
A choice. Yep. And they now all have a nightlight in them that can be manually controlled with the app and also be controlled with an ambient light sensor. So it can sense when it gets dark and it can, you know, do things with the lights, and it's all configurable. The Beacon is only a dual radio device, but they say that they've been able to get it to operate at 30% greater performance than the first gen Eero. So greater range, greater speed. Yeah. Yeah. Which is pretty cool. So, and their prices, they've actually done some interesting things with the prices. So the Eero and one Beacon is $299. The Eero and two Beacons is $399. And the Eero Pro setup, which is three of the second gen Eeros, is $499, which matches the Linksys Velop pricing for their three pack of tri-band, hardware. So there you go. And Linksys is the other company kind of to watch right now. They've got good hardware in the market, and their software is being developed at a very fast pace. They are not yet where I would say they're better than Eero. In fact, not even close. But the pace at which they're developing that software is astonishing. And so that they are ones to watch as well. So there you go. That's the news I got about mesh. Oh, I do need to throw one thing in. Eero also announced something called Eero Pro along with these things today. Sorry, Eero Plus. Eero Pro is the package. I got my notes in front of me. Eero Plus is a software update. It adds features to all Eeros, and all of the Eeros are intercompatible. So if you have an Eero set up with three, you know, or even two existing Eeros, and you want to add either a Beacon or a second gen Eero to it, that will work. And then you get Thread connectivity from that device, and they all talk to each other the way they should. Eero Plus is software that can be added to any Eero setup, first gen or second gen. $999 a month or $99 a year. The first two features that they're rolling out with it are anti-malware and really deep parental controls. Huh. You know, Eero sees about, 10 billion data events per day, and they aggregate all that data. It's all done anonymously, of course. Otherwise, you know, people would scream and yell about them being creepy, and rightly so, but they're not being creepy. So they have real insight into how home networks work, what they do. And you might remember I have been preaching that router vendors are the ones that should be monitoring not just our networks in terms of the things trying to access from the outside, but our networks in terms of the things inside them starting to act strangely. We've seen botnet attacks and things like that. Mm-hmm. Well, that's part of what this can do, is it can monitor sort of both directions of that traffic and say, hey, this is an anomaly, you know, and then alert the user and say, hey, you should check this out, and that sort of thing. So there you go.
That's very cool. All right. So If I have the current Euro setup or the original Euro setup, which is what I do have, before we wrap up here, am I okay with this, or is it time for me to go ahead and upgrade?
I would say that if your Euro is working, and this is true of any wireless network, if it's working for you and you don't think about it and it's not causing you any headaches, that's the way it should be, and you shouldn't mess with it.
Okay. I think that sounds like great advice. Cool. And thanks for sorting all that out for me, because
sure.
The whole thing with it suddenly faster and I'm glad to understand why now. So thanks.
Right. For that info. You do a huge service for the entire Mac and Apple community with all of your wireless networking information that you help give us, Dave.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you for that.
My pleasure.
All right. Hey, we are out of time, so we need to wrap up. Dave, thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Brian, thank you for being here as well.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us. Yep. Good stuff.
Absolutely good stuff. And iMazing, thank you for being our sponsor. Head over to their website, iMazing.com/TDO. Get your copy of iMazing for your Mac or your PC so you can do everything you really wanted to do with all the data on your iOS devices. Listeners, thank you for being here. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.